This is David Kaplan on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Cap and Company podcast, presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
Cap and Company.
Follow us on the gram at Cap and Co.
And ESPN underscore Chicago.
Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
Welcome in to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Watch us on Twitch today. Find the channel ESPN 1000 Chicago. I'm Chris Black along with Jesse Rogers in for David Kaplan today. If you want to join the show, you can call us at 312-332-3776. Once again, Jesse, we start a show off by talking about baseball, but this time, well, actually, no. We've kind of dealt with this all summer. Baseball, once again, not having their stuff together. Rob Manfred yesterday going on the Dan Patrick show.
Get the company line, I mean, Rob, come on.
How can you go out and admit? This is what really took place yesterday on the Dan Patrick show. He went out, he admitted that all summer long, baseball wasn't planning on playing any more than 60 games at any point of this season. So, like, so many things run through my head when I hear that. First of all, we dealt with how many months of the back and forth when they knew all along it was only going to be 60 games. Then you say you're only going to play 60 games. And in my head, I'm like, okay, so the month of June, you could have been playing baseball. July could have been the end of the regular season. And then we could get to August and have playoff baseball. And oh, yeah, by the way, most experts, health experts, are suggesting that past Labor Day, we're going to have issues in this country with COVID-19. So you actually could have gotten this baseball season in. We could have been at the halfway mark here on the 4th of July weekend.
And at least the one thing I'm happy about, it confirms reporting like from myself and others that said all along owners were dragging their feet with this in mind. Now, the fact he admitted that, I wonder how that's going to affect like a potential grievance. We'll have to play the audio in a moment. But it's insane that all along that's what they wanted, because they could have played 80 or 90 games if they got their act together and wanted it.
Right.
And wanted it.
Absolutely. So that's Jesse Rogers. I'm Chris Bleck. If you want, join the conversation, 312-332-3776. Yesterday, Rob Manfred, commissioner of Major League Baseball, was on the Dan Patrick show. Here's the audio.
The reality is, we weren't going to play more than 60 games, no matter how the negotiation with the players went or any other factor. 60 games is the outside of the envelope, given the realities of the virus. And, you know, I think this is the one thing that we come back to every single day. We're trying to manage something that has proven to be unpredictable and unmanageable. I know it hasn't looked particularly pretty in spots, but having said that, if we can pull off this 60-game season, I think it was the best we were going to do for our fans, given the course of the virus.
The best they were going to do. 60 games. That's it, Jess. All summer. That's what they planned on.
Let's give him the benefit of the doubt for a moment. He didn't use the words all summer, right? We didn't.
Okay.
So maybe it was the more recent, you know.
Sure. Go with that.
Talk. Because if he meant back in April they were planning on 60 games, or May while this thing was shut down 60 games, then he just handed the players a grievance.
Sure.
Win. That's what he did. So he must have meant in these final moments we were down to 60 games because of the virus. But again, that was their fault. They dragged their feet on the first proposal, the sliding pay scale. That was meant to just, you know, throw a, you know, bomb into this thing, because there's no way the players were going to get divided and accept that proposal. So I hope he meant in the final conversations it was down to 60, not the conversations in May.
Isn't this a larger conversation, though, with Rob Manfred and the way baseball has kind of handled everything, not only throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, but it seems like in the last couple of years? When has baseball done something right?
No, it's been terrible under Rob Manfred. It has been. And, you know, the people in the media circles talk like this. Does Rob Manfred love baseball?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
a
question that should never come up. That's a question that should never come up for a commissioner of a sport.
No, never.
It shouldn't, but it's what people whisper. They should say out loud now.
The commissioner should be the one championing the sport
of course.
Along. And, you know,
piece of hardware. Remember that line?
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, Cap brought to the table, who's the worst commissioner in sports? And I disagree with him because I immediately said Gary Bettman. But I think Cap might be onto something. It might be Rob Manfred. Because even though they have the schedule, well, first of all, they don't have a schedule. They're going to play 60 games. We don't know the schedule, right? Like, teams are reporting. We are testing. But we also don't know how this season's actually going to play out.
No.
But once again, that goes back to, like, why did baseball spend all summer going back and forth yet? They don't actually have their plan in place. Like, when should we expect a schedule? The week before the season?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, why does that bother you that much? Well, what's the difference if we get it today or in a week?
Why have all these question marks?
It's not like fans need to plan for anything.
No, but it goes back to basically baseball wasted the month of June. They did. Then they're going to use the month of July to ramp up.
Right.
And they're going to start playing at the very end of July.
Right.
This is all time that nothing has really changed on the medical side when it comes to the pandemic. You know, like, why did it get to this point? It got to this point because the players and the owners disagreed on what it was going to take to actually play this season.
Yeah, and they disagreed on their pay.
So as they were disagreeing, going back and forth for 2 months, why didn't they have things set in place? So the moment they announced that there's an agreement, we could line everything up so we know that this is going to take place.
Well, I mean...
You know, but Buster was on with us yesterday, and he was on over the weekend saying that there's a 0% chance the season's going to happen.
That's
so, like,
his opinion.
It is his opinion, and I think it's interesting that a connected guy like that is suggesting that some of this won't even take place. Meanwhile, we're still kind of waiting.
Chris, I don't know. I think you're being a little too harsh because everything's developing. MLS just had 6 players test positive within their bubble. Yeah. Within their bubble. The NBA has players opting out and not sure what's going on there. And then MLB with this testing, we're going to hear a lot of positive tests, and people are going to be all critical about that. I mean, nothing is perfect. This is going to be uncertainty all the way through. So it doesn't bother me that not every I has been dotted and T has been crossed. I think health protocol wise, they're doing their best. They have a system in place. The schedule's not out yet. I don't think that's a big deal. You know, the fans can't go anywhere.
I'm the only one that cares.
For some reason,
by the way,
teams get to sign off on it. Maybe because if they don't like a travel thing, they get to have their say. But here, it's regionalized play. I don't disagree that it probably shouldn't take that long to put out a schedule. It's not like these arenas are being used for something else.
That's true,
you know,
right?
and they're not arenas, but stadiums are being used for something else. They're all available. So anyway, but it doesn't bother me because I know it's coming. You know, you got to have the schedule at some point here soon. But back to the original question, they could have played more games, and they just. I mean, the month of May was a disaster for this sport, and June as well, really, to be honest.
How do you think players are responding to hearing Manfred say that what he said on Dan Patrick yesterday?
Well, they'll be upset, and without the context of, did he mean, like, in the end, like, that's the phrase he should have said if he meant that.
Right.
In the end, we weren't going to play more than 60 because the calendar wasn't allowing for it. If he meant in the beginning we weren't going to play more than 60, then he really, really handed the players a grievance win.
Oh, baseball.
Because that means they didn't negotiate in good faith.
There's another top story that we're watching here at ESPN 1000 today. Yesterday, Jesse, the NFL it was reported by ESPN, they will cancel weeks 1 and 4 of the preseason. So we're getting to a 2-game preseason for the NFL. And I think if you follow the timeline, the NFL has already canceled the Hall of Fame game, which was supposed to be August 8th. Now they are canceling the first week of the preseason. They're saying the 4th as well. But what that points out to me is you cancel the Hall of Fame game, you cancel the first week of the preseason. To me, it tells me that the NFL is buying time, right? They're buying time to get to a place.
No doubt.
To say, okay, we can have 2 preseason games. I think what this is signaling is that we're going to get to a point where there won't be a preseason in the NFL. And if you're a Bears fan, knowing that there's a quarterback competition that you need to be had heading into the season, that to me, it's not going to happen.
It's going to be the most intense practices at Halas Hall they've ever had, because that's how they have to prove themselves.
Yeah.
So they're, I mean,
are you worried that they're now canceling two?
I mean, what their reasoning does make some sense. There's nothing organized in the offseason, so these players need extra time to get into football shape, and that time's going to have to come in camp, so we'll cancel the beginning of preseason. Basically cancel the beginning of preseason. So I think, you know, that there is some validity to that, but at the same time, it does buy them time, as you just mentioned. The preseason certainly gives them some extra time in terms of, like, if we have to push everything back, if we have to cancel it. Like, once you start canceling regular season games like baseball did, now the, you know, the money stops flowing in, the integrity of a season starts being in question, but nobody cares about preseason. So if you have zero preseason games, it'll make for some sloppy football in week one, but it's still regular season football. So yeah, it buys them a little more time, and if they cancel these two, it'll buy them even more time. But I'm still fascinated by the fact that now the Bears have a quarterback competition with two games. I mean, what happens? They each get a half in each game, and the winner is assessed off of that? I mean,
probably.
Along with practice.
Well, Jess, you know, and
Dickerson's
remember,
going to be telling us, you know, falls through an interception in, you know, day three of practice. Uh-oh, you know, it's just, man, they need the four games. That's my
remember
opinion.
How training camp went last year. Dan Weider, Jeff Dickerson, all the reporters that came on this show and other shows at ESPN 1000, they kept telling us, Trubisky looks bad. Trubisky's not picking it up. Things are not going well. And what happened? We got to the regular season, and it seemed like Mitch never really gathered what was going on with the offense, never took that next step. So if it is only through practice, I think hands down what will happen is Nick Foles will prove himself in practice that he will be the starter. Is that who do you think will be starting when we get to week one?
I mean, my head says Foles. Like, the logic says Foles. You traded for him. He's a Nagy's guy. Blah 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 blah. World champion. You know, but there is part of me that thinks that scenario that we all have talked about will play out. You start with Trubisky. Foles is break glass in case of emergency. Like, I love that phrase because Foles seems perfectly fit for that. I feel like if Foles starts, injury is 4 weeks away and there's Trubisky for the rest of the year. I like it the other way around. And also, it does give Trubisky one last real shot. I don't know. I feel like if Trubisky's the backup, he's done. He's done. Like, he's not the guy that's going to come in relief and lead them to the Super Bowl. It's the other way around. I could be wrong about that. So I'm torn. I'm torn.
Okay, good. Nick Foles is break glass in case of emergency, in case Trubisky starts out poorly.
Right.
I will tell you next why that could lose the team. I'll tell you about that next.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Chicago's home for sports.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
Black with Jesse Rogers in for David Kaplan today here on ESPN 1000. Talking football with you at 312-332-3776. So, Jesse, if we look at the offense last year, 30th in points per game, 32nd in yards passing attempt, first downs per game through the air, 25th, passing yards per game, 26th, rushing yards per game, 29th. So the running game did not help out the quarterback either. Rush attempts, 24th. Yards per play, 31st in the National Football League. Some of those stats, some of the worst in the NFL. I feel like at times last year, the defense gave up or just didn't give the full effort we saw from the year before when they went 12-4 because they knew that this offense was a dud. They knew that the quarterback was not going to get them where they needed to be. We saw it in the Eagles game. I feel like there were times, that Raiders game, even though Trubisky wasn't in that contest. You know, that there were times last year the offense let down the defense. And I think what you see with Nick Foles being traded in this offseason, it gives everyone on the team hope that things might be fixed for the future. So I think if you tell me that the break glass in case of emergency quarterback is Nick Foles, I think that's a flawed way to look at it, because if the Bears offense gets off to a very rough start, and if you look at the start of the schedule at Detroit, then you get the Giants at home, at Atlanta, and then you play the Colts, the first four games of the season, I'm guessing the Bears will be favored in two of those contests. Because on the road, Atlanta, I would imagine it's a three-point line. The Bears are probably the underdog in that contest if you look at it from Vegas. And then the Colts are a good team. Even though they're going to be playing the Bears at home, that might be one of those pick-ems, depending on how the first 3 weeks of the season goes. I doubt the Bears would be favored by more than 3 points in that contest.
You still haven't told me why break glass in case of emergency is a bad strategy. You're filibustering.
Exactly. It's what we do in sports talk radio. The point here is that I feel as if you come out against Detroit and New York and you don't play well offensively, the defense is immediately going to look at this situation as nothing's changed from last year, even though you have that quarterback waiting. Now, the momentum of the team could completely change if from game one, if Nick Foles comes out and plays well and the offense puts some points on the board. Doesn't that change all of our mood when we look at this team going forward? So we don't get that, this again.
Well, that, I get it.
The kid gloves with Trubisky.
But that's assuming.
Hopefully he'll figure it out.
That's assuming Foles comes in and clearly wins the job. And I don't know how you clearly win a job with practice and two preseason games.
And this is the way I look at it. If Foles comes out and doesn't play well, okay, that's fine. There's nothing ruined there. We've seen him not play well in the past. It's not like this is going to be some player that we're expecting these high expectations. Then it's, okay, Trubisky, now it's your turn. Prove it. We've gotten to the point where the guy we traded for didn't get the job done. It's back to you. Can you figure this out?
Maybe that scenario better.
I think that plays out. I think that keeps more of the team on the same page.
Let producer Eric speak. Birthday. Happy birthday, Eric.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
What do you got?
What winning NFL team is relying on their backup quarterback to save them? Like, that is not a... If you go 99% of the NFL teams...
Why are we giving Mitch more? If he clearly wins the job.
The only situation where, like, a backup can do that is, like, if it's a young guy who you weren't sure was ready.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have that situation. Right. We have two backups fighting for a starting role.
If Mitch wins it in the preseason, by all means, go ahead. But if you're just saying, oh, well, there's not really going to be a preseason, allow Mitch to try, we didn't figure it out. The defense is not going to be on board with that.
Yeah, I disagree with you. The defense is not going to jump ship one or two games into the season. That's the scenario you're presenting.
Did the defense look the way it looked the year before? I know there were some injuries.
No, and you're right. The offense put them in a bad spot, no doubt. But one or two games in, the defense knows what? Nick Foles is ready to go.
One or two games? How many games are you willing to give up because of Trubisky?
First of all, you're not thinking that way. You're not thinking sacrificing. If Trubisky is starting, it's because you think he can win. You absolutely not because of the strategy that we're presenting. I'm just saying that isn't the worst case. That's not so bad to have Nick Foles there in case of emergency. Like, that's a... If you're going to do it one way or the other, I think most people would prefer it that way. Using him as the emergency guy, not Trubisky as the emergency guy.
Either way, the fact is,
Foles rarely stays healthy for 16 games. So maybe you need to ride Trubisky for as long as you can. Maybe it's a 500 record after 3, 4, 5, 6 games. Well, not 3 or 5, but and then you go to Foles because it's just, you know, you're treading water. I don't know, but... I think we're just presenting these scenarios in a vacuum. If one guy clearly wins the job, then that's the answer for sure. But if it isn't clear and Trubisky looks okay and Foles looks okay, maybe you start with Trubisky and go to Foles. I'm not the only person saying that.
No, I get that. And no matter how you slice it, the question of which team has the best backup in the league is probably the Chicago Bears. Whoever's a starter, because we could rank Trubisky.
I hope Trubisky's better than most backups.
Well, I would think so, and he has starting experience.
Yeah,
so,
he wasn't better than Bridgewater last year.
That's true, but but Teddy Bridgewater now has a starting gig.
Right.
So if you look at it, like, I think there's very few backups who are better than both Nick Foles and Mitchell Trubisky. So if you want, like Jesse, okay, this is why I broke out the first 4 weeks of the season. Week four, the Colts, listen to the teams the Bears play weeks 5 through 10 before the bye week in week 11.
I know where you're going. Perfect time to bring in Foles.
We have the Bucks, the Panthers, the Rams, the Saints, the Titans,
Foles,
and the Vikings.
Foles, 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 Foles.
The Bucks are expected to be a playoff team.
I mean, think about
Carolina
this.
Is the only team in there that's not a playoff caliber team at the moment.
Think about that. It's perfect. If you're talking about team psyche and stuff, okay, if Trubisky's playing well after those first four against lesser opponents, great. Sure. Let him ride that confidence into the tougher part. If he's not playing well, well, we break glass in case of emergency. Here comes Foles to take down the great Tom Brady on Thursday Night Football.
And you'll be there, right?
I'm hoping. My friend has tickets and will allow me to go. But, you know, he thinks because he's in that elite class that they're only going to let the suite holders. And I'm like, dude.
He's not going to sit with the real fans
over
here?
Exactly. I'm like, they're going to let several tiers of ticket holders in. They can't just allow the big money people like you in.
Are we going to games? Is that a thing we're doing in the fall?
Oh, I'm going to Bear game.
Jesse's going to be the one fan.
I got to watch TB with TB. I mean, I got to go to that game.
Yes. Yeah. Let's go to Joe and Mokina. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Joe?
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
Good, man. What do you think?
Hey, so are we really to believe that that Foles, there's going to be a competition? I mean, the money they gave Foles, he's going to be the starter. This is all lip service that they're telling us, right? I mean, I really believe that Trubisky, and plus them not picking up the fifth-year option, the guy's got no shot. He's just there as a backup. I think this is Foles' team now. I mean, do you think there's going to be a competition?
Probably not. But here's the thing. I maybe I'm wrong about this, but like if you think it's Foles' team, then maybe Trubisky should have been jettisoned altogether. Now, maybe that's not the right thing to do because he is a talented backup for sure, and mm-hmm. you want the best talent at every position you can get, including your backup. So I get that, but remember, Trubisky is kind of well liked. You know, I don't know about the Devin, but you know he kind of still thinks it's his team. Like if you really wanted to hand it to Foles, you would just move on from Trubisky all the way. That's my feeling. I could be wrong about that, and you're probably right. It probably will be Foles. But let's not say for sure anything. Like, oh, they traded for him. He's got to be the starter. No, I mean, weirder things have happened. It's not like Foles is, got Tom Brady's resume.
No, it's true.
And he's injury prone.
Thanks for the call, Joe. Jesse, I disagree with that because Trubisky's still under contract at a reasonable price.
Yeah.
So for right now, there was no reason to move off of him.
Well, just the idea of, okay, it's no longer his team sort of thing. I guess it can still exist.
Okay. Let me give it to Foles and put
Trubisky in the backup role.
I know during this time slot, Trubisky is Montana, but listen, was it really his team? Well, at what point was he the leader of the team?
He's a nice guy, and he works hard, but by definition, quarterbacks that have good years end up just being the face. He had a decent year the year before. They went to the playoffs under him.
Are you going to do the Pro Bowl thing with me?
No, but
okay.
I mean,
all right.
Come on. You weren't.
Yeah, they're 12-4. It wasn't because of Mitch.
And he was moving in the right direction. It felt like he was moving in the right direction.
It felt like he had a lot to prove.
Yeah,
felt like there was something, but there was a lot more.
Moving
to
in the
prove.
Right direction is the right way of putting it.
It's a way to put it.
All right, your birthday's over. Your birthday's done now.
Joe and Chester, and you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Joe?
Hey, guys. Love the show.
Thanks,
I am a truther, Trubisky truther.
Oh, welcome aboard.
So here's the thing. You're talking about the defense letting down the defense not doing well. I always go back to that Saints game, right? Trubisky's first game back after injury. All right, they were down 12-10 at halftime. By the time Trubisky threw his first pass in that second half, they were already down 26-10. I believe it was a Montgomery fumble and a Anthony Miller fumble. And so I believe the defense went out on the field after the first after halftime. Bridgewater threw a deep pass to Ted Ginn Jr. for a touchdown, and I think Montgomery Miller fumbled one of the two, and then they scored again. So Trubisky's first pass against the Saints came with being down 26-10. And then you go to the Chargers game, all right, Pinheiro misses two or three field goals, one to win the game. So there's two wins right there. And then you go to L.A., right, two more missed field goals. So, and then you, nobody ever takes this into account. One, Nick Foles is guaranteed $21 million over 3 years. All right, that's about a little less than $8 million a year. And he can opt out after this upcoming season, okay? And number two, Taylor Gabriel is no longer on the team. He doesn't have a 5'7 receiver to throw to. He has taller receivers now. So, and I recall in that L.A. game, he would throw the ball on target to Taylor Gabriel. He would drop it. In the Kansas City game, he threw two passes to Javon Wims on target. He drops both of them. So it's like, I mean, come on. So I understand that the first three games before he got hurt was bad, but when you go up against Penton in that better Green Bay defense and then Vic Fangio, who knows the entire Bears offense's strength, and they still win that game, it's like, come on. So, but this upcoming year, I agree with Komet. This is no excuse. This is a no excuse year for Trubisky. But going, you know, what he did in 2018, winning Offensive Player of the Week a few times. And then last year, had a couple of good games, one against the Cowboys, top 10 defense. You know, you have to think that with better production from the offensive line, the running game, and receivers catching the ball, it will lead to a better Trubisky. Don't you agree?
Thanks for the call, Joe. We appreciate it.
It's usually
Trubisky truther right there.
Yeah. It's usually the other way around. The quarterback makes the other guys better. It shouldn't have to be the running back and receivers make the quarterback better. That's my answer.
My favorite NFL game is hometown fan looking at losses, counting them as wins because things should have gone the other way. Yeah. So let me ask you this. If that's the case, the Bears beat the Giants, a bad Giants team, by 5 points, 19-14. Did the Giants, do Giants fans look at that game and say, oh, you know, if we got the right play here, there. Right. The Bears also have a win against Minnesota in the last week of the season by 2 points. The Vikings didn't play starters.
Right.
They didn't play their starting quarterback.
We always forget
Does that go the other way?
I still want to ask people, and we have to break, 312-332-3776. How does Nagy handle these two preseason games with the quarterback competition? I'm going back to the fact that it's actually a competition, okay, and not that Foles is Joe Montana and reincarnate. I mean, come on. Let's assume there's some competition here. Maybe there isn't, but let's assume there is. How does going from 4 to 2 preseason games change things? How would you handle it if you were the coach of the Bears regarding Trubisky and Foles?
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. Cap. This is Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at the Capman on Twitter.
Chris Black, Jesse Rogers, sing in for David Kaplan today here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. You can tweet the show at Jesse Rogers ESPN and at Chris Black. Here's a tweet from John, Jesse. It says, Chris, there's one big problem with your argument. His name is Matt Nagy. With 6 exclamation points. You are as stubborn and tunnel visioned as Nagy.
I like this tweet.
The sad truth is, unless Nagy changes his ways, the Bears are dead, no matter who the quarterback is. How about that?
It's so amazing. I mentioned Trestman yesterday to you, how the similarities here, whether it be quarterback or coach for the Bears, right? First 2 years ago for Trubisky, first year for Nagy. They both looked like they were going in the right direction. Certainly Nagy did. I mean, we loved Nagy. And then last year, felt like Trestman's second year a little bit. Not quite as bad, obviously, but a little bit. He didn't lose the locker room, but things just didn't work for him. And it's been the debate, right? Did the quarterback make the coach look bad? Did the coach help make the quarterback look bad? And I think people are down on Nagy, not just because of Trubisky, but for other things they saw, starting with the run game, which, of course, is still tied to the quarterback play. Be interesting, if Foles is the quarterback, does Nagy look that much better as a head coach?
If you go to 2018 and you look at the running game, the Bears were 12th in rushing first downs. They were 8th in the league in rushing attempts. In 2018. In 2019, in rushing attempts, they were 24th. and they were 27th in rushing first downs. So, Jesse, when you have a young quarterback in the NFL who's trying to find his way, the best way to help that team get along would be a good defense and a run game. And for some reason, Matt Nagy last season ditched the run game on the side of the road because he was ready to take his offense to the next level and show what he could really do. But while he was doing that, the quarterback couldn't do what he needed him to do. Thus, the offense completely fizzled out.
Yeah, sometimes numbers are misleading, right? Because
about rush attempts?
You're not going to let me finish. It's like Cap. Let me finish.
Well, it is 9 to noon. Let me
finish. Sometimes, I'll tell you what can be misleading about rush attempts. If you're trailing throughout the game, every single game, you're going to rush less.
Right.
But you didn't let me finish. I was going to say sometimes numbers can be misleading. If you are trailing throughout the game, you know. But in this case, the numbers aren't because the Bears played a lot of close games. They weren't down 21-0 in the first quarter, right? So the fact that they didn't have more balance early on. Now, late, if you're trailing, you're going to throw. We know that. But throughout most of these games, these were tight games. There should have been more balance. And Matt Nagy on this very station admitted that.
And you're right about the way the game started. Because in 2018, the way the game played out is most times after the first quarter, the Bears were in the lead. Thus made almost everything a little bit easier on the offense, on the defense, and it kind of all came together.
Easier to be eighth in rushing attempts, no doubt. But he abandoned the run before he needed to. Let's face it. I think he would even admit that.
Which is a part of his DNA.
It's
what he did in Kansas City.
It is. But Mahomes wasn't QBing the Bears.
No. Let's go to Pat in Bellwood. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Pat?
Hey, what's up, boys? I see y'all on Twitch out here.
Yo!
Jesse going full Jim McMahon on it this morning.
I got my Blackhawks t-shirt. I got the shades on. I'm feeling good.
I see you. This is my thing. This is what I think Matt should do. I personally don't think, even with two preseason games, teams are going to put their best talent on the field in the third and fourth quarters. They're going to be trying to fill out the end of that roster. So give each one of them a game so that both of them gets the first half to basically see the best talent. Then you can evaluate, all right, this is how Mitch looked against real defense, or this is how Foles looks against real defense. And I think that's the best course of action for him.
Man, one half of football determines the opening day starter. Because he's not wrong. I mean, that is how you measure against the number ones. I think that's probably how it'll happen, right? Trubisky gets the first half of one game, the second half of the other game. It's got to be you have to take the totality of it all, including their contracts. I mean, that's just that you take into account everything. Practices, obviously, the two games, what you're paying the guy, the leadership in the locker room. I mean, you just make the best decision. If it's even close, maybe it'll. Joe Madden used to say things will work itself out. They will tell us. Baseball will tell us. Football hopefully will tell us, but with two games instead of four, maybe it doesn't tell us.
Right, and like what Pat was mentioning is like what you'll see in the second half of some of these preseason games, you might not even get much anyway. So really what we are being told will be such a smaller sample size. I wonder, Jesse, you know, your question on if Nagy can get the two quarterbacks ready to play for opening day in the opening week of the NFL season, and then also, like, I wonder how Bears fans feel about that. Like, the fact that we kind of just have to wait and see, and when we get to week one, whoever Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace decide will be the starter, it's like, all right, we'll kind of figure it out, because we can't really make too much of a judgment based on what we'll see in the preseason. You know, like, as a Bears fan, what would give you the higher hopes for this team being successful in the 2020 season? Week one, which quarterback starting would give you, like, they both play well in the preseason. What would give you more hope for the future?
It's a weird question.
It is, right? Because if Trubisky...
Trubisky, under the scenario you're presenting, if you're saying they're both playing decent, that means Trubisky is using his legs, something Foles doesn't have as much. Foles is a little more injury prone, so... my point is, like, if I want a healthy Foles for the final 6-7 games because maybe Trubisky wanes as we get into the season, then here he is. Foles is ready. I can't explain it better than that. So if they're both equal, I think Trubisky gives you the better chance because it means he's being more accurate and he's using his feet. If he does that, I think he's a better quarterback than Foles. But that's like a big if. That's like saying if Chris Bleck was accurate and used his feet. You know what I mean? Like, if
I can use the feet. I'm not accurate down the field.
If he can do it, then I guess the question is who has more upside if they're both playing well. I think the answer is Trubisky.
Because to me,
I think the answer is Trubisky.
In my head, I go back to the way Tennessee handled it, right? Marcus Mariota got a chance, and he proved he can't really be a starting quarterback in the league. He's now with the Las Vegas Raiders. He's going to be a backup. He's a good backup. But go back to the year before, Miami made the decision they're not going to pay Ryan Tannehill. So they let him go. And Ryan Tannehill comes in, wins that starting gig, and puts up, what, a quarterback rating of like 90.7? You know,
classic change of scenery.
One of the best players in the National Football League last year. Now, going forward, do I think that the Titans are going to be a great team because of Ryan Tannehill for the future? No.
They got that running back that's a beast.
But you know how this works. Running backs are good for a very short period of time, and teams that win on the margins like that in the NFL don't usually last for a long period of time. Jacksonville 2 years ago, that was the hot team.
Right.
Running back with Fournette, you know, a quarterback who was questionable, and the defense led the way. And what happened to them?
Right.
You know, you could also paint that same picture for the Chicago Bears. You know, questionable quarterback, defense led the way, supposed to take the next step. They didn't do so. So you look at the whole picture, and it's like, yeah, it would be beneficial for the Bears long term if Trubisky comes out and is the best player from day one and is successful in the season.
Because he has more upside. He does. He does. Just his age, his ability with his legs. I mean, here's the thing. If Trubisky is 50% more accurate, wow. Okay, all of a sudden we might have something to work with. That's it. I don't need to see numbers. He just needs to be more accurate. More times. More times accurate. Everyone misses a few passes. He misses too many.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%. 3-1-2-3-3-2.
Nothing else about his game is all that bad, but that's the game for a quarterback.
Decision making. To me, that's the glaring hole. Is that
there's certainly a few of those. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. But if he was more accurate, we wouldn't even think of these other things, I don't think.
Andy in Old Town, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up?
Hey, what's up, guys? What I wanted to say was it'll play itself out. Last year, remember, they were talking about Trubisky at camp and how bad he was, and Cap kept saying, don't worry about it. Well, when you practice bad, you play bad. Very few players who practice bad play great. And for that reason alone, it'll play itself out. And one other thing everyone keeps mentioning, what a great athlete Trubisky is, this, that, and the other. Well, people seem to forget that Nick Foles was an all-state basketball player in Arizona. So even though he might look a little gangly, things like that, the guy is an athlete. Let's see what plays out. The practice will determine everything. You guys have a great day.
Hopefully.
Thanks, Andy.
That'd be great if practice determined everything, but it doesn't always, you know? It just doesn't always. It'll be interesting because I'm sorry, and everyone knows it. Not I'm sorry, but everyone knows it. Competition brings out the best. I mean, that's just the way it works. So hopefully it brings out the best in both of them, and it becomes a tough decision, but a good tough decision. Not a, you know, like if they're both bad, one still has to start. But if they're both like looking solid, hopefully one of them carries that over to the regular season and the backup is there just in case and they roll from there.
Jesse, you've said multiple times that Trubisky's the better athlete. I have a stat that I want you to explain to me coming up next between Foles and Trubisky. We'll talk quarterbacks with you right here on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Sports talk while you're on the clock. Cap and Company,
Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This hour of Cap and Company is brought to you by CBDMD. Discover the secret to everyday wellness. CBDMD, superior CBD, superior you. Get 20% off when you enter the code WADDLE. Let me ask you this question, Jesse. Jesse Rogers, Chris Bleck, sing in for David Kaplan today here on Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. You said that Trubisky is the more athletic quarterback, right? Yeah, we
That's what my eyes tell me. You're going to throw some nerd stats at me and convince me otherwise.
Believe me, this is not a nerd stat. This is run-of-the-mill, easy to consume.
My eyes tell me Trubisky's the better.
This is fast food stat right for you. This isn't some fancy deal. This isn't some keto Kaplan-Zerman deal. This is fast food. This is a Big Mac stat for you.
Throw it at me.
In 15 games in Matt Nagy's system with the Chiefs and the Eagles, Nick Foles, in the 15 games he played for those two teams, he was sacked 18 times.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, Mitchell Trubisky played 15 games for the Bears and was sacked 38 times. If he's a better athlete, why are the sack numbers so dramatically different?
Because he's a worse quarterback. And that's two different things.
Ah, so it doesn't matter that he's the better athlete. Well, what's important is the smarter quarterback, right?
Well, of course, that's number one for sure. I mean, after the natural ability, I guess, to, you know, if you're in the NFL, you've got some ability, right? So, yeah the smarter ones are going to obviously do better. But you presented the scenario before the break. If they're both playing well, you see, which tells me that Mitch is using his feet. Mitch is being more accurate. That's what I mean. Like, he has more upside if the good Mitch comes out. And we know we've seen it in spurts. We just haven't seen the complete package for a long period of time. So that's kind of what I'm saying. And look, when he uses his feet, that first year under Nagy, I mean, come on. That was dynamic stuff. And that showed you the kind of athlete he was. Not being able to avoid a sack was as much, like you said, bad decision-making.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't take away from the fact that he's a decent athlete. It's just bad decisions, you know, and not maybe some poor line play. You can't ignore that either. But anyway.
Nerd stat, or was that run-of-the-mill? Run-of-the-mill Big Mac stat, or was that some keto nonsense?
I just don't know if it's completely relevant. So that's my answer. I just don't know if it's
a non-relevant stat.
I don't know if sack stats
taking sacks
tell us if a quarterback's a good athlete or not. I'm not sure that correlates necessarily.
Okay. That's fine. Jackson on 290. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Jackson?
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're good, man.
Sorry, that was hilarious. A non-relevant stat. You just been hanging out with Kaplan too long.
Yeah, seriously.
But like, why are we having this conversation when, I guess, assuming Cam Newton is healthy, if he has a good year, I think the city of Chicago calls for Ryan Pace's job. I mean, in all honesty, when you think about it, you're like, would you rather have Mitch Trubisky or Cam Newton? Obviously Cam Newton. Would you rather have Nick Foles or Cam Newton? My mind, it says Cam Newton. You know what I mean? You're taking a risk either way. So I think you're taking the bigger risk on Nick Foles rather than Cam Newton. I mean, I don't know. It's not really a tough decision for me. I don't know how you guys feel about it. I'll hang up and listen.
We talked about this yesterday, and I said exactly what you just said, that if Newton succeeds in New England, even though it's under Belichick, it will be a huge stain on Ryan Pace, right? Now, the question with Newton isn't if he's better than Trubisky or Foles. The question is if he's healthy enough to be better than those guys. And if New England's handing him the starting quarterback position, I assume he's healthy, but we don't know. I mean, the bottom line is Belichick's probably going to make Newton look better than Nagy could make any quarterback look because he's Bill Belichick. So we'll see.
Rob in Naperville, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Do you think about
– I was
– Go ahead.
I understand that that Trubisky – he's not the greatest quarterback, but I always go back and, you know, I was last year I looked at when he would drop back, he barely had any time to get rid of the ball because defenders were all in his face. And I think that his receivers, other than Robinson, were average at best. When you look at Mahomes, he's got Kelce. He's got the guy that can run like 4-2 and open up, the field a little bit. And Trubisky's got none of that.
Thanks for the call, Rob. You know, Jesse, to answer Rob's point, I would say that I don't think anyone's comparing and thinking that Mitch can be Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I hope
so,
not.
So comparing the offensive weapons for the Chiefs to the Bears, we know that the Chiefs are a better team. Can Mitch just be average? Can he be the 20th best quarterback in the league?
Would you take 2018 Mitch? Is that not good enough?
So where are you trying to get?
You're trying to get the Super Bowl.
Oh, so we're trying to win.
Yes.
Well, Super Bowl. Need better.
They did win a bunch of games in 2018. So I'm just starting.
Yeah, they did.
It's my starting point.
Their quarterback in the wild card game didn't play well.
At the very least, we need 2018, Mitch.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay. I agree with you need more, but let's start with that at least.
Gorman in Mount Greenwood, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, fellas, how are we doing today?
Good. Great.
Yeah, I just want to talk about Foles and Trubisky. So Trubisky supposedly trumps Foles because of his athletic ability and his ability to use his legs. But I just want to have you guys take a look back in time a few decades at Dan Marino. If you have your guy check his stats, he rushed for less than 100 yards his entire career. And I think everybody would have to agree that Dan Marino is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. So I think if Foles is given the opportunity and he has the right line in front of him and receivers, you know, it's possible that his career could have that same trajectory. I'm just going to shut up and listen.
Thanks for the call, Gorman. Yeah, go look up the stats on that, Jess.
With that previous caller, I was going to mention Marino. When you mentioned the stat, the sack stats, I was going to mention Marino. It's all misleading. But let's get this out of the way.
Uh-huh.
Foles has all the intangibles. That's the reason they picked him up. I mean, that's the reason he's really good. Obviously, he has some talent, too. But we think of Foles having the intangibles, and that's why he might be great coming to the rescue in relief. So there's no doubt he has that advantage over Trubisky. Trubisky might have a little bit more going with his legs, but that may not be enough to win the job. And he certainly didn't use his legs in 19 like he did in 18.
Some good football conversation right there. But, Jesse, we're going to talk some baseball coming up
Mike
next.
Mike Borzello is the assistant pitching coach for the Chicago Cubs. So we'll talk to him about Tommy Hotovy, the actual pitching coach, and everything that he went through. I'm sure they were talking daily as Hotovy was fighting COVID-19. And Mike Borzello is kind of the guy that knows where all the bodies are buried. So my point is he knows stuff. He knows stuff. And hopefully he'll be able to tell us how these pitchers are looking as they head into their first day of spring training 2.0, which starts tomorrow.
Borzello coming up in 2 minutes right here on ESPN 1000.
This is Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.